accession number 29045, Mr. Keith Glover, Reel 2. Now, when you got to Hednesford, can we talk a bit about, we didn't bother with Cairns, you're only there, but what was the accommodation like? Can you just describe that? Was it a hut? What was it?
I certainly can describe it. They were wooden huts on stilts, and I am led to believe they were there for the First World War troops. I believe it. Believe me, I believe it. And what were we? I think about 16 to a billet.
How was it laid out?
Lino floors, 8 beds each side, with a small locker and a tall locker. And I think they were either side the bed. An iron bed. We had sheets. The army tell me they didn't, but we did. One clean sheet every fortnight. So you've got a clean sheet a week. Red lino floor. A door at each end. And at the front entrance, there was 2 small rooms that housed Corporal D.I.'s to keep their eyes on us.
Now, where were the latrines?
They out the back door, and there'd be an ablutions block. And I swear blind that I did not pass any solid waste all the time I was there. Every time I locked myself in a cubicle to sit down, there would be a voice shout, "Outside 13 flight!" And I would gallop out, pulling my trousers up. Corporal McCloskey, bless him, the senior DI.
What was he like? Give us a pic. Because some of these instructors, there's a popular image of them, but in a way it's not entirely true.
Most of them were as soft as grease, but not Corporal McCloskey. I am told, or was told in those days, that he'd actually had 3 tapes at one stage, but been busted for some crime. He didn't physically lay a finger on us. He didn't have to. We were all terrified of him.
Now, why? I mean, you were 19, yeah. You'd been in work for 3 years.
Of course, he got 2 stripes, and he shouted loud.
Did they swear at you?
Not in my experience, no. I'd never heard a DI use a foul word. Plenty of swearing among ourselves.
But was
not
it, was
from
it
them.
Humour they used, or was it just volume? Or why did they shout?
No, there was no humour at all. When I said they were as soft as grease, they were gentle in the way they handled us and achieved the same results, I would hasten to add. I don't know.
They were
know.
Fair then?
Yes.
Was McCloskey fair?
Yes. He was a pig, but he was fair.
So how was he a pig then?
Well, around the stilts that the huts were stood on was a gravel path all the way round. And McCloskey gave me the job of lining all these little pebbles up, all neat and tidy. Now, I don't know why he wanted them like that, but he told me to do it, so I did it. And when I finished, I fetched him, and he says, "Very good." And he stamped down there, digging his heels in, throwing the pebbles all over the place, and said, "Now do it again." No, I've heard tell stories of some people having to scrub the parade ground with a toothbrush, but I never did that. And then,
were there any other punishments you remember? I presume it was a punishment.
No, I don't think any of us got put on a charge while we were square bashing.
Now, let's look at a typical day's training. And I know there's no such thing as a typical day, but if we go from the start, just pick up the sort of things in your basic training at Hednesford, can't pronounce it, you were doing. What time would the day start?
The day would start about 4 a.m, although Reveille was at 6. It started at 4 a.m. so we could get our hut up to spec for the early morning inspection.
Now, how would you get your, what did you have to do to your hut to get it ready? How much did you have to go to town?
Well, we'll start with the bed that had to be, the bed not dismantled, but all the clothing, and made into a nice square block at the top of the bed with a blanket sheet, and then a blanket folded round it, so it was like a box. And then we'd start on the floor. They have big things called bumpers. Heavy lump on that was hinged on a brush stale that we had to swing backwards and forwards to get the floor nice and shiny. Then, of course, we had to clean the rifles. 303s, you know, Lee Enfield 303s, proper guns. And by this time, the 2 hours had gone. Oh, we'd got to bull our own webbing and buttons as well, because they were brass in those days, not these Stay-Brite.
So how did you do the brasses?
Well, we had button sticks, so we could slide all the best boot buttons in one fell swoop. And then again, dodges I'd got from ex-mates. It's like a toothbrush, only it's got not bristles, but rubber things. And they were particularly good for polishing the buttons, getting in the crevices. Then, of course, the boots had got to be bulled again.
How far did they go there? I mean, were they doing underneath, or was it just... Oh,
no, if it was a kit inspection, then you'd got to do top and bottom. But if it was just for the day's work, just the top, as long as your boots were clean and the toe caps were shiny, that was okay.
Did they have Blanco, you know, on for the webbing?
Well,
did the RAF use that?
Yes. Our webbing was blue, and Blanco, by its word, is white. As a bandsman, I had a white webbing belt. That was later.
But this is a basic training.
No, at square bashing, I joined the station band at Hennesford. In fact, we had...
I'll come back to that, because that's not really in the day, you know.
No.
So, were you Blancoing or not? I'm a bit confused.
Yes, the webbing, small pack, large pack, webbing belt, that all had to be done. And we had... it was like a boot polish, really. It wasn't water-based. It was a tin, like a tin of boot polish that we applied with a brush, as you would your shoes, and then buff up with a second brush so that the webbing shone, actually. Looked neat.
Now, what were the kit inspections? You know, you had 2 hours to get... Would there be... What was the morning kit inspection like?
Well...
What would they do?
The DI would come down and, as well as inspecting... It'd take us bed by bed. And... Your lockers would have to be open, so, and everything stacked in a prescribed order. Then he'd inspect the beds and your bundle of blankets and sheets, and then the airman. So starting with the cap badge at the top, down he'd go to the boots at the bottom, and the... make sure that the creases were in your trousers and then your battle dress where they should be, and then the rifle inspection, where he had to open the bolt, stick your thumb in so that the nail was shining, the light was shining up the barrel, and he'd peep down the barrel, and then if that was okay, we'd be marched off to breakfast.
Now, was the food here as good as it had been at the Carlington?
I never had a bad meal in the RAF.
So that can be taken as read, don't have to
all ask. The way through.
Now, what about... So this is, what, 6 o'clock? A bit later.
Bit later than six, because in theory we weren't getting up till six, you see.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it'd be, what, 7:30-ish by the time we were marched off down to the mess.
Now, after breakfast, what were the training sessions? I don't know whether we start with drill, because that's an obvious place to start.
Well, in my case, the first session of the day was a band practice.
Well, Well, let's do that, because you'd signed up for the band. Was that was because you were still playing the cornet then, or had you switched?
No, by that time, I can clearly remember when I got there, the corporal bandmaster said, "What instrument do you play?" I said, "Anything except the trombone." He said, "Oh, Salvation Army." I said, "No, because the Sally people, they're all multi-blessed with skills." I said, "No, it's just that I have played everything except the trombone." And in fact, at Hennesford, what? I started straight with a... No, I didn't. I started with a euphonium there. I can remember that now. And then eventually I was moved on to a bass. The bass section was a bit slim.
That's a bass swap. Sorry, bass.
A double B flat bass. Big, it's like a big euphonium.
Oh, it's another a bass euphonium. Sorry. So what would... you were a member of the squadron band.
Of the camp band.
Camp band. Now, what did that... So that meant that for the first session, you had to go and practice. Now, what were the practices like? I mean, you might be better than they were, in a sense. I mean, were you, weren't you? What was it like?
Disciplined, but no more disciplined than a brass band or an orchestra has to be. Oh, sorry about that. The practices were friendly. The NCOs, the permanent NCOs that were in the band, were nothing like the DIs. They were human. And of course, we'd got this rapport being brass musicians. And that's still true of today. I got a telling off once because I was messing about with the bass. The bass is such a big instrument, you can actually speak into the mouthpiece and it comes out the bell end like the tannoy system on a railway station. So I'd be saying daft things like the train standing at platform 3, and he put up with it for about 4 times and then said, "Look, if you do that again, I'm going to put you on a charge." So I thought, enough is enough, Glover, stop. And I did.
And what sort of musical program? Was it the same musical program as you've been playing, or was it more military,
Mostly it was marches, of course, as you can appreciate, because that's what we were there for, to march the troops up and down. We did do selections, because there'd be a dining in night at the officers' mess, and we would go and serenade the officers, and that was always nice, because they'd send a drink out for us every time, so that was pretty pleasant.
Would the people read music, or was it, I mean, in other words, would you be playing off a score?
Oh, yes.
Or were you...
We were all conversant with notation.
There wasn't no learning.
No.
You just played the music.
Yes, and then that would be kicked into shape by the bandmaster, and then altered...
How would he do that?
Well...
Non-musician, if you could, because a lot of them won't understand that.
I actually coach a band, and even if they're all playing the dots that's in front of them, they're not necessarily playing them how you as the conductor want them. It can be too quiet, it can be too loud, it can be just a tad out of sync. So, and it's surprising the power of the conductor. If you watch the last night of the Proms, don't just think that old guy stood there waving a stick. He's doing much more than that. He's dragging emotion out of the musicians, and a good conductor does this.
And was the conductor your bandmaster?
Military bands to this day have this. They have a senior player. Normally, it's a senior NCO. Who will take the rehearsals, practices, let's get it right, pieces of music they may well need for a concert they're going to do. And then in the fullness of time, the conductor will arrive. He invariably is in the Air Force a squadron leader, who will then shape that music to what he wants.
So, how long would you be at a session? An hour?
An hour, yeah.
Now, what about the rest? I mean, you were still a very new recruit, a raw recruit.
Yeah.
Did you miss anything in that hour?
Well, I must have done. But it didn't... mostly, while I was at a band practice, the rest of the guys would be in an education lecture or something like that. And I was always released in time to get the last 5 minutes of this. And the guys would fill me in as to what would happen. Now, what you have to realise is that when these guys are called up, they come from a whole strata of life. So you've got people, I served with people who'd got science degrees, and in the same intake would be somebody who couldn't add two and two to make four. So the education lectures tended to be very simple, and that sounds very big-headed, but it's not. Very simple for anyone that's had a decent education.
Which
I had. It was aimed at the lads that had come from sec mod schools and perhaps hadn't bothered to go to school at all.
So it was something you could easily miss.
Yes.
Now, what other sessions would you have in this typical day and hour?
Then drill.
Now, how did you take to drill?
I loved it.
What did you like about it?
It was disciplined. I've always taken a great kick out of team games. And you can imagine, there were 16 of us. I think it was 16. And we get there, we're a shambles. We couldn't stand in a straight line. And as the weeks progressed, this little unit got tidy. We could right dress. Our ranks were clean. They were straight. We could march in step. And the step was rhythmic. You know, the heels went down together. And if you got an about turn, and it went like clockwork, you thought you'd won a gold medal. It was great. No, I didn't mind that at all.
You had no trouble. You weren't a TikToker or clockwork or
whatever. I didn't have any trouble. We did. We had a couple of guys in the flight who could not march, and in the end, the DIs recognised the fact that they were not going to march. And when we fell in, for whatever reason, to be marched off to, we'll say, to the MO or to the mess even, these two will be told to fall out behind and walk in your own pace. They weren't allowed to march with us, bless them.
Yeah. After drill sessions, say, any other sessions?
Well, there'd be PE. There'd be a compulsory games afternoon.
Now, taking physical training all together, you know, with the games, you know, what sort of PT physical training were you doing?
It was bog standard for the day, and it was the same as schools, where you'd do a stride jumping with arms raising sideways and all variations of this. I used it myself in time, yeah. Vaulting and agility. I can't remember ever having been sent on a cross-country run. I just can't. I suppose I must have done, but I can't.
Assault course?
Now, that's interesting, because the weekend that was scheduled, I'd been... what's the official term? There is a word for it. It will come to me in a minute. The band at Hereford was short. They'd got a weekend parade through the town at Hereford and needed some musicians. So I and another three, I think it was, including the bandmaster corporal, were... it's annoying. Seconded, that's the word. We were seconded to RAF Hereford for the weekend to help them with their parade. And that was the weekend of the assault course, so I missed it.
Now, generally with a PT, and the whole programme, you know, did it make much difference to you? You were a fit lad, you'd been interested in sport, you weren't that long out of school, probably hadn't given up sport yet. Did you need it, or was it just part of the course?
It didn't make me any physically fitter. But as I said earlier, you got people, there were some real little umpty dumpty lads, you know, little fat boys. And they used to puff and blow. It's very much, it's no more, in my view, than what used to be the PE in schools. It's not like that now, and I think that's a mistake. Well, they're panicking about it now in the papers about obese children.
So you coped, I mean, it was just what you were anyway.
Yes, yes, there was no problem.
Now, what else were you doing? What about weapons training? I'm thinking of the rifle training.
We had a session on a 2-2 range, 25-yard range, where the weapon was a Lee Enfield, but it had a 2-2 sleeve put on it, so we were firing 2-2 cartridges at 25 yards. I managed to break the clip holding the target, which was not received too well. And then we were taken off to the full range with 303 ammunition. First with Bren guns. Now that was great. I could handle a Bren gun. And it happened, and this is a true story, you will probably have seen it in a comedy film. We were told about the safety, and Bren's can block, I've forgotten the word for that.
Jam,
thank you. And they said, whatever you do, don't pick it up. Well, believe it or not, one of our guys got up from the prone position, picked the gun up, and says, it's stuck, Corporal, just like that, swung it round. And to his credit, the DI didn't panic, he just bashed him and knocked him over. And I should have thought so too. A bloody clown, he could have killed us all. So, that's a true story, believe me, that happened. And then we popped off, I think, about 50 rounds at the Bren gun.
And you were good with the Bren gun?
I was good with the Bren gun.
What about the rifle? I mean,
we'll get to that now. 10 rounds. Oh, you have to learn how to load a clip. I just thought you put 5 rounds in a clip, but no, you don't. There has to be a certain way so that when you put them in the guide rail of your rifle and snap them down, they do actually load into the magazine. I always thought, you see, before I joined the RAF, that the magazine on a rifle came full of bullets, but it doesn't. That is empty. You shove the bullets in from the top end. That's why your clip has to be loaded correctly, else you'll get a jam. So we put 10 rounds in the gun, the rifle. Prone position, 100 yards. I pull the trigger, and it jumped out my shoulder, hit me on the nose, made it bleed, and I lost interest completely. So after that, I was sort of holding it at shoulder, arm's length from my body, and the rounds were going anywhere but near the target. And in the end, the sergeant DI, he kicked me, not hard, you understand, gently in the ribs, and said, I will reflight you to Civvy Street. Oh, thanks, Sarge. And unless you've got a certain score, you would be reflighted. So this rotten guy then, he took my rifle from me, and he stood up at 100 yards, and he put most of my rounds straight through the bull, standing. And there was no way I was going to hit the damn thing. So he didn't reflight me, but I couldn't use a 303 to save my life.
Now what was the problem? Just it sounds like you just couldn't hold
it. I was obviously not holding it tight enough. And as I said, the first round I fired, the gun shot out my shoulder, hit me on the nose, and I thought, I don't like this game.
So it made you a bit nervous? So
very nervous.
What about your eyesight? Was that having an effect on
you? No, because at that stage, I hadn't been informed.
So you didn't know?
I didn't know. In fact, for ground crew, I was A1G1. I learned later that for aircrew, I was A4G1. But it wasn't until I was doing my trade training that I discovered that.
Now, any other weapons you were introduced to?
No.
Not even the sort of Sten gun or the...
No, no, the no, no, no.
Hand grenade?
No, we didn't throw grenades.
Bayonet?
Oh, we had a pig sticker. But we never did any formal bayonet practice. It was just there as an embellishment on your rifle when you were on a dress parade.
And what are the training then? So that's weapons training, PT, education, drill, and your band practice. Anything else during a typical day?
No.
No trade stuff at all, because this is your basic...
No, this is just square bashing, you know, getting us to be tidy individuals. And as the DIs pointed out to us, it wasn't bull. You know, we said, oh, it's bull. He said, it's not bull, he said. It's just cleanliness.
You mentioned, that's a thing I'd forgotten, but it's something that's very important. Did they actually teach you how to be clean, to wash, to sort of just do the basic things?
Like not that? Actually your body. But they taught us how to iron shirts and press your dress and things like this, because as you can imagine, in those days, boys didn't do that sort of thing. And at the end of the day, and I realised this even at that tender age, that what they'd said about it's just cleanliness was true. When you've got thousands of men living together, you can't afford to have anybody that's dirty and smelly. And in fact, later on, if that happened, the men in the block would take care of it themselves by bathing the individual that was at fault.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads? I mean,
very well, as you do. You've been thrown into this melting pot. There was a sequence on television, and in fact, they've just replayed some of it called Band of Brothers. If you've not watched it, watch it and listen to the music, because that is out of this world. And you just, unless you've experienced it, it's very difficult to explain. You just unite. Although there's 16 individuals, it's a flight. There's no room for individualism. And you'd share your last cigarette with your mates. It is absolutely incredible. The RAF did away with billet block some years ago, and we've got a member down here who's only just come out the RAF as a chief tech, and was in the, he says, Keith, it's the worst thing they ever did. You go to an RAF station now, most of the airmen live off camp. They've not got this sense of belonging that we had. And for years afterwards, you know, people kept in touch
from basic training,
from basic
not
training
from squadrons and
no.
Was there any, the answer's going to be no, I suspect, but I've got to ask, was there any bullying at all within the group?
Not in my experience. Now, I'm sure there must have been flights where this did happen, but no, not with Flight 13. We were a band of brothers.
Was there a big difference in class, social status amongst you, or was it all?
Bloody well was. We had one guy in our billet, smashing guy. They came from down south, Locking. I'll think of the place in a minute. It's not Western Supermare. That's it. And he was one of these guys I've told you that was already qualified. He was a qualified auctioneer. And he bowls into the billet, and he's got a set of civvies. I say, hey, what's that game here? He says, well, on sports afternoon, while you're out there kicking the football about, I am playing golf with the CO. So every bloody Wednesday, because he was an extremely good golfer, and obviously his father pulled a few strings. The groupie could have been no mug with the club. And this worked. I've forgotten his name now, bless him. But I knew him so well, I used to go down to his home and stay at the weekends with him. Wednesdays, on with his civvies, off we went in the CEO's car.